We hear often about the importance of a healthy diet and making good nutrition choices. The Cleveland Clinic just booted McDonald's from its campus to help remove temptation from employees and patients. But despite best intentions, we often disengage the brain and eat bad things anyway. This morning, when snacks attack. Welcome to the Sound of Ideas. I'm Mike McIntyre. Mindless eating, potato chip after handful of potato chips after handful of potato chips can destroy your diet. So can that second helping of pasta, which you scooped onto your plate for no particular reason at all. This morning, Northeast Ohio nutrition experts will teach us about the sweet, salty, and savory sabotage that lurks, and strategies for avoiding the ambush. One strategy, be mindful of what you're eating. That means quit multitasking. Don't down Doritos while finishing the annual report. Don't chomp Cheetos as you navigate I-480. If only it were that easy. Share your stories and get valuable advice after this news. It's the Sound of Ideas from 90.3 WCPN IdeaStream. I'm Mike McIntyre. Good morning. Thanks so much for joining us. The average person, according to a Cornell University study, makes several hundred food choices every day. You've probably made several already this morning. Breakfast or no breakfast? Pop-Tart or bagel? Kitchen or car? But did you make those decisions mindfully? Often we engage in mindless eating. Why did I pour that second bowl of Fruit Loops? Was I really hungry? I just opened this bag of Ruffles and now it's empty in my hands. How did that happen? We all have good intentions. We've got top-tier healthcare institutions setting the course for healthier eating. Most recently, with the Cleveland Clinic setting an example by booting McDonald's from its campus. McDonald's fries can be a mindless eating minefield. Many of us have bountiful produce to choose from, and we know how to read nutrition labels, and yet, there we are, halfway through a Costco-sized bag of peanut M&Ms at 3 in the afternoon. This is a national problem, and it contributes to obesity, another national problem that has suffered acutely in our state, where 30.4 of residents of adults are obese, higher than the national average, according to the American Public Health Association. We all know the health problems obesity brings. Hypertension, sleep apnea, diabetes, heart disease. The list goes on. But the snacking doesn't have to. Producer Lauren Wilson this morning has lined up some terrific local experts to discuss mindless eating and the opposite of that, mindful eating, and the fight against it in Northeast Ohio and across the nation. Being mindful about our food might save us a few thousand calories and give us a few more years of good health. And we'd love to have you join our conversation this morning, 216-578-0903, with your experiences, thoughts, questions. You can call us 866-578-0903 toll-free. Send an email, SOI at WCPN.org. We're tweeting the show this morning, so check us out at Sound of Ideas. And we're going to have a parallel conversation, pick that up after the show at theciviccommons.org. Let me tell you who's with us this morning. Dr. Susan Albers, clinical psychologist and a New York Times best-selling author on the issue of mindful eating, including the books Eat, Drink, and Be Mindful and Mindful Eating 101. Welcome.
Thank you.
Very nice to have you with us this morning. And Janine Leon is with us as well. She's a nutritionist at Metro Health and knows all about mindful and mindless eating.
Good morning.
Good morning. Very good to have you. And now joining us by phone is Carrie, who belongs to the Food Addicts in Recovery Anonymous. And to respect her anonymity, we're just calling her Carrie this morning. Good morning to you. Thanks for making time for us.
Thank you so much to be here.
So you're in recovery, as the name of the group indicates. If you could, tell us a little bit about what you're recovering from. Tell us about your food addiction and how mindless eating played a role.
Sure. So I grew up morbidly obese. I was about 5 years old when I was overweight. And eating was almost like breathing. I mean, the amount of quantities that I would consume in a day, I honestly, looking back now, I couldn't tell you how much I ate because so much of my eating was mindless. I would eat large quantities of food, mostly salty, fatty, greasy food, a lot of sugary things, a lot of fast food at a very young age. A lot of my eating would be done in secret. I would hide food. I would go back and get it later. I would wait for my parents to go to sleep so that I could tear into the leftovers without leaving a trace behind. I would eat in front of the TV. I would eat at friends' houses. I would take food from my friends. I treated food as a drug, and I consider myself a food addict because I cannot handle flour, sugar, and other foods such as vegetables or protein or things like that in moderation. The program that I joined, FA, Food Addicts and Recovery Anonymous, has helped me to abstain from addictive eating a day at a time with a very simple food plan and the spiritual support that I need as an addict. So I've been able to lose 130 pounds wow. and maintain that for close to 5 years now.
That's terrific. Let me ask Dr. Albers to jump in on that. A couple of things that I wrote down when I was listening. Young, started at a very early age, eating in secret, eating in front of a television, and then the idea that food is like a drug. That sounds like it sort of hits all the spots of mindless eating.
It does. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Carrie, for sharing your story. And I'm sure that anybody who's listening identified with many of those behaviors and habits. And sometimes that's how they start. When we talk about mindless eating, we have so many different mindless eating habits, whether it's sitting in front of the TV, mindlessly eating, popping food into your mouth, and then all of a sudden you get to the bottom of the bowl and you say, how did I get there?
Right.
How did I get there?
Awesome. And is there any more in the pantry?
Is there any more? And that idea of sort of secrecy of once you've eaten too much, just feeling so regretful. And there's a whole range of mindless eating habits. Sometimes we get so ingrained, and then sometimes we do it just on a daily basis and don't even really realize that eating in the car, for example, is a huge mindless eating mm-hmm. habit that many of us have.
Janine Leon, do you notice that a lot of the people that come to you with bad nutrition habits that they formed very early, as we're hearing from Carrie, that from youth they were eating bad things?
Absolutely. And even with my own two young children, the prompts are there. Rewards through the teachers, through school, hanging out with friends, watching television, sitting, playing video games. A lot of time we're just not tuned in, paying attention. And often you're still hungry, even after you've downed all of this, because you haven't really fulfilled most of your senses.
Hmm. And Carrie, then how did you come to the point where you realized, okay, this is, I'm sure you tried dieting and other things in the past. Mm-hmm. When did it come to a point where you said, all right, this is an addiction and this is the way I need to treat it?
Well, I was fortunate because I have family members in other 12-step programs. I did try dieting when I was about 16 with not too much success. I lost maybe 20, 25 pounds and then put that weight on plus more because I felt deprived. And I didn't have, the 12-step solution that I have now. So a family member of mine found out about FA, and she was doing it, and it looked interesting because I was trying to diet and lose weight, and I was miserable. I also want to say I came from a very loving household. It's hard to pinpoint what caused my food addiction. It might honestly just be genetics, there's definitely behaviors and genetics, I think, that play a role in me being a food addict. So this family member found FA through a friend of hers and then came to some meetings. I started reading the literature and then was feeling miserable and thought, well, I've tried everything else. I might as well. And I went to a meeting and I just heard hope and saw people that were thin and happy, and I wanted what they had, and I've been sold ever since. So, and it's just kind of as I've gone to these meetings and worked this program a day at a time, it became clear that I am a food addict, and I also. In our literature, there's 20 questions that if people are wondering if they're a food addict, because it's definitely a tall order to admit you're a food addict, there's 20 questions you can ask yourself. And that really helped me when I answered 18 out of 20 with a yes. Wow. I thought, okay, I'm probably too shy.
Yeah, that's an A. You get an A in food addiction.
Yeah.
Carrie, thanks so much for sharing your thoughts with us this morning. And I'll mention that on Saturday, October 17th, and we'll have information on our website about this, there is a meeting at Southwest General Hospital in the Jones Atrium off the cafeteria on Bagley Road in Middleburg Heights from 10 to 11:30 a.m. of the organization you're talking about, Food Addicts in Recovery Anonymous, 10 o'clock meeting. It's free and open to the public. Maybe if that's something that strikes a chord in listening to Carrie this morning, you can access our website if you don't remember, but the information I just gave, but I'll give it to you once again, 10 o'clock on Saturday, October 17th at Southwest General. You can go to foodaddicts.org in order to get information. Thanks so much for being with us, Carrie. Appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much, Mike.
Dr. Albers, it's not a diet. Mindful eating is not a diet. So tell me a little bit about the distinction, because I think people who are trying to lose weight always think about the next diet, the paleo diet, the Atkins diet, the Mediterranean diet. What about the difference between mindful eating and dieting?
And that was a good point. And Carrie kind of touched on that. She'd been trying to diet for years. And anybody who's a dieter knows how frustrating it is. Research indicates that people tend to lose weight initially and then they regain weight later. So that's the thing that I really love about mindful eating is that it's not a diet. There are no menus or recipes. So you can eat in many different styles. It's more about how to eat than what to eat. As a psychologist, I don't take an approach where I tell people, you know, don't eat flour, sugar, you know, anything like that. But learning how to be more aware when you eat, knowing when you jump into some of these mindless eating habits can take you a really long way.
Sometimes you grab the third or fourth piece of pizza because the first two tasted so good, yes. But you're not hungry anymore. So I wonder if mindfulness has to go down to what to be mindful of. Like, I need to be mindful that I'm not hungry anymore, or I need to be mindful that I'm going to feel like crap as soon as I finish this entire pizza.
Distinguishing the difference between emotional and physical hunger. And we get very confused by those two concepts, emotional and physical hunger. Emotional hunger is that craving. I've got to have potato chips. And not just potato chips, but barbecue potato chips.
Right.
You know, and physical hunger, we can eat a variety of different things to feel satisfied. But a good start for people if they want to eat more mindfully is tuning in and asking themselves, you know, am I really hungry or not?
Our number is 216-578-0903. Eating something we all do. Overeating is something many of us do. I'd love to hear your thoughts, your comments. Perhaps you are one of those binge eaters. Heard a little bit about that earlier today on NPR as well. But maybe you want to share a story with us, as we heard from Carrie, about overcoming that. Or maybe you've just got some questions for our nutritionist and our doctor here this morning. We're ready to answer them for you. 216-578-0903 or 866-578-0903. If you prefer email, go ahead and send us an email, soi@wcpn.org. So when people come in to see the dietitian and the nutritionist and they're trying to get everything in order, they have the best of intentions. And you do the thing where you show your hand or the deck of cards and you say, this is a serving of whatever. And everyone gets the information. It's not as though they don't have it. And yet still, at 5:30 when they get home from work, half a bag of chips is gone. So how do you deal with that when you're trying to sort of work through those things? It isn't just a matter of educating people, but then, Janine, getting them to actually employ it.
Right. We all know what it is what we're supposed to be doing, but putting into action is the complicated piece. One of the things we really focus on is not allowing yourself to get past this point of no return in terms of hunger. I see lots of kids and adults who are not eating breakfast, for instance, in the morning. And so by the time 10, 11 o'clock rolls around, they are famished. And at that point, logic sort of flies out the window, and they're really tuning into what's craving because they know whenever they eat something that's high sugar, high fat, it's going to instantly make them feel better beyond just satisfying the hunger. So one of the key things we really teach is trying to get meals in, feeding, getting all of those nutrients you need early in the day, and then also same thing for the afternoon. Don't starve yourself all day so that whenever you get home, you're just grabbing the first thing you can shove in your mouth to make yourself feel better.
And I have talked to people and been guilty of that myself where you're like, okay, well, I didn't eat all day, so I'm doing good. You know, I didn't eat breakfast. I had a cup of coffee. I was busy at work. So, wow, that's a good 12 hours without eating. I got home, but then That's when you just tear into everything.
Right. We're patting ourselves in the back in the wrong way. At the end of the day, our bodies do have some base nutrition requirements. We need to get our vitamins, our minerals, our fiber, our protein. We need to get that in. So by avoiding everything early on, you're really giving yourself a very small window to meet all of that. And truly, you're starved. Your brain is not rational. Your brain is hungry. You really have to feed yourself as you go.
216-578-0903. I've got an apple right here in front of me, right? Brought it in today just for this occasion. So if it's morning time, I might eat the apple, but then I still have the donut too.
Right.
And so there's sort of the rub. It's like I did the right thing, but then that other thing is still there. And how do you, when you talk about being mindful, I'm mindful when I'm eating the apple, and then I say, let's turn that off for a second so I can inhale this donut. So how are you able to make sure that the mindfulness carries through, you know, for the rest of the intention for that particular meal?
Well, we do live in a very mindless eating environment, and we do have to keep that in mind. Many of my clients come in and they're so hard on themselves, saying, why is it so hard for me to eat in a mindful way? I have CEOs who come in, I have dietitians, I have people who say
dietitians?
Absolutely.
Yes. Wow.
Absolutely. Who say, you know, I know that an apple is better than a candy bar or a donut to eat, but how do I choose that? How do I choose that in
And just that
and stick with that decision? And I think that we fall into a lot of these habits. And so once you become more aware of the habits that you have, then you start making a lot of good changes. And it's amazing how much just being aware of that mindless eating environment and your habits can change things. Because we can sit down and eat an entire plate of food and not taste one bite. We just kind of pick up our fork and eat and dig in. It's very easy to eat. And when we start to pay attention to when we're eating and what we're eating and our hunger and fullness cues, things begin to shift.
And it isn't just snacking. You just mentioned you can eat an entire plate of something and not have tasted it. Or if everyone else is eating more slowly than you, you get up and go for a second helping from the pasta pot and sit down and eat with everybody else until they're done. If they're really slow, you might get three helpings. And yet you're not really hungry and you're not even thinking about it. So I wonder if the idea is, and we'll talk about some specific strategies in the next segment as well, but I wonder if, you know, you want to do a sort of a check your hunger or keep a checklist or don't get up, a rule, don't get up from the table when you're eating. When you're done eating what's in front of you, you're done. Are there specific strategies like that you can employ?
To get people going on mindful eating, I tell them the 5 S's of mindful eating. And they sound pretty simple, but they're much harder than they sound.
It's slurp, snack.
No. Number one is to sit down, as you're saying. Sit down. We're often walking around, eating, popping food into our mouth. So sitting down is going to help you to be more focused. And your body's going to experience the eating in a different way. You're going to digest it much better. Number two is to slowly chew. That's a tough one as well. But we can do that. We can slowly chew, kind of gauge how quickly we're eating. And when we slow down, again, we tend to eat less. Number three is to savor. Really taste your food. We eat a lot of mediocre food, things that are just there because it's there.
On that point, I do want to note that, like Michael Symon, the chef.
Yes.
You know, he talks about eating the pork and all these things that you think would be terrible for him. He's in great shape. Mm-hmm. He works out a lot. And his point is, I won't eat things that don't taste good. And I don't eat things that are just not good for me. Mm-hmm. So while you would think all that bacon is particularly bad for him, he's only eating that which is delicious. And I wonder if the rest of us, we're just shoveling it in.
And he's only eating a bite. And if you've ever watched a chef eat, and so this is a tip for people to eat like a chef. You know, they really taste it. And what research indicates is our first bite is actually the most flavorful, because about 3 or 4 bites in, we become habituated to the taste. And so it's not actually as pleasurable. So if you make that first bite a really mindful bite, you pay attention, you smell it, you taste it, you're going to end up eating less in the future.
All right. You promised 5. We got through 3, but we're going to take a break and we're going to get you the other 2 S's on the other end of the break. The first 3, sit down and eat, slowly chew, and savor. When we come back, we'll tell you the 2 other S's. We're also going to talk about how some local efforts are concentrating on children and their mindful and mindless eating and how parents can interject themselves into that equation too. And we'd love to have you join our conversation at 216-578-0903. Put an 866 in front of that if you'd like to call us toll free. If you're watching on the Ohio Channel, welcome to you. And we're going to take your call, Leslie, in Brecksville after this break, too. It's The Sound of Ideas. I'm Mike McIntyre. Back in a minute. Mm-hmm. You're back with the Sound of Ideas from 90.3. Just turned 9:27 a.m., and we're talking about mindless eating and actually transitioning that to mindful eating. How can we be more mindful of what we're eating? Snacking is really killing us, and second helpings and those types of things. Really a big concentration in Northeast Ohio on that with our healthcare institutions, Cleveland Clinic, Metro Health, University Hospitals, everybody preaching that. We've had a number of shows here about eating better diets. We talked with Dr. Stephen Nissen of the Cleveland Clinic during one of our shows about having the Mediterranean diet. All of that sounds great, but it goes out the window if you're pounding a bag of Doritos at 5:30 in the evening, so and not really even thinking about doing that. So we're talking about that, about getting over that mindless eating thing, and we'd love to have you join our conversation at 216-578-0903 or 866-578-0903. Dr. Susan Albers is with us. She's a clinical psychologist at the Cleveland Clinic, right? Okay, I didn't suddenly want to give you a different affiliation. And she is a New York Times bestselling author as well, and many books on the topic of mindful eating. And Janine Leon is with us as well, a nutritionist at Metro Health. And we're welcoming to the conversation in just a moment Dr. Sarah LePay. But we'll first take a phone call, as I promised, from Leslie in Brecksville. Leslie, welcome to the conversation. Leslie, are you there? Uh-oh. Sorry, Leslie. All right. Dr. Sarah LePay is with us, a pediatrician and medical director of the Be Well Kids Clinic at Cleveland Clinic Children's. Dr. LePay, thanks so much for making time for us by phone today.
Thank you so much for having me.
So we've been talking about what we adults do and how we have this idea of mindless eating. Does it start in childhood? Do you see a lot of children who are eating things simply because they are and aren't particularly hungry or don't really have a reason for it?
Absolutely. This is something I think we see almost from infancy, and it's something that, parents are doing. Children are learning from their parents. You know, it starts really from early on, when the infants are crying, figuring out, is my infant hungry? Is my infant tired? Is she just bothered by something? And really kind of from early age, often the default is to go to feed your child instead of maybe trying to figure out if there's something else going on as well.
And that goes beyond giving the child a bottle. I mean, mm-hmm. You see parents going to the zoo with their kids or wherever it might be. There's always like a pack of goldfish or some other thing mm-hmm. that is basically to keep them quiet.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I have a bit of a love-hate relationship with those snack containers that everyone carries around. You know, I have my own children, and they are easy because then you can have this container that your child can carry. But then, while they can eat it while they're sitting in a stroller, they're not going to spill. But then that means they may have that with them all the time, and really they don't need to have something with them all the time to snack.
Janine Leon, you work with children as well at Metro Health. What's your view on the way they mindlessly eat? I mean, if you give a kid a snack, they will eat it all day.
They will. And I think Dr. LePay hit on something good. Some of the food manufacturers have really marketed these little puffs and these from a very, very early age, very sweet tasting little things that just melt in your mouth. Mm-hmm. They don't make a mess. So we're really priming this at a very, very early age.
So no wonder they're eating chips at middle school and worse as you get older, because they've been conditioned to always be putting snacks in their mouth.
That's correct.
So the strategy then is to be that terrible ogre parent that doesn't let your child snack when everyone else does?
No, the alternative, maybe you could offer some grapes or some cut up strawberries.
And cut up grapes, by the way, full grapes,
cut
not good
grapes
for kids.
Before the age of three, mm-hmm. correct. But you're making wise choices if you are going to provide a snack. Those snacks can provide some nutrition beyond just something to stick in your mouth to make you stop crying or fussing.
What about that as an alternative, Dr. LePay?
Absolutely. So, avoiding the sweetened snacks, just like you were saying, is a great idea. And shooting for something that's going to provide your child with some nutrition, make something that has a little bit of protein in it, but also some other things. So like celery with peanut butter on it. Granted, it's a little bit messier than the prepackaged snacks, but in the end, it's going to provide better nutrition for your child.
I'm sure someone will come up with peanut butter flavored celery. That's nice and clean and neat.
One of the things I do like that parents are very good at is that they do bring snacks. And think about how wonderful that is. We bring snacks for our kids. Moms are always putting snacks in their purse, but they often don't bring snacks for themselves. And so they're really good about gauging their kids' hungers, because if your child is really hungry, they will have a meltdown. I mean, they just kind of fall apart. And so they try and gauge their kids' hunger, but they don't do the same with themselves. So I would encourage moms out there, and dads as well, caregivers, to not only pack a snack for your kid, but pack a snack for yourself.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I think the commercial gets to the point really well, where you see somebody that they're like Richard Lewis kvetching about something, and then they say, well, you're hungry, and they give them a Snickers bar, and then they're a normal person
right,
again.
Exactly.
It's a great commercial until you come to the Snickers bar, right?
Exactly.
So it should be that
the
situation.
The point is good.
Right. But give them a carrot.
Yes.
216-578-0903 is the phone number to call, 866-578-0903. I mentioned earlier that many of us have bountiful choices in front of us as it relates to produce and things in the supermarket and looking at labels and those kinds of things, but not everybody does. And we've done some programs here about food deserts. There's a big study that's being conducted about the impact of bringing better food into neighborhoods that don't have access to it. They don't have the grocery stores or the kind of produce choices. And I wonder, Dr. LePay, what about children that are living in neighborhoods where they don't have access to this or where it just hasn't been a tradition in the family? What about overcoming that barrier so that you do have celery and grapes rather than just the easy around-the-corner store to buy a bag of chips?
Absolutely. This is a big challenge that I see in a lot of my patients that I'm seeing in my clinic. And so this is where I think having the schools offering healthy meals can be very helpful. So, you know, if children aren't having an option for breakfast at home, having breakfast at school instead of stopping somewhere on the way and picking up something quick and taking advantage of the school breakfast program. And then there's also been some movements around the country and also some locally here. We're trying to increase the healthy options in the corner stores. And they've actually shown an increased consumption of fruits and vegetables in those communities if there are more options in those stores and that people will buy them.
That's a funny thing that you say, because increased options means people are actually availing themselves of that. And I think of, not picking on any particular fast food, but I'm thinking of McDonald's particularly. They created a menu that has all kinds of salads and other things. And when there was question earlier when the clinic was going to more healthy food choices in the vending machines and the cafeterias, the answer about the McDonald's was, this one has that stuff top of menu and there's all kinds of good choices, and yet everybody's still getting the Big Mac. Mm-hmm. So I wonder if choices really work if the bad choice is still available.
You do make an excellent point, because, you know, we can do so much with marketing about putting the placement of, you know, in schools, for example, moving the plain milk in front of the chocolate milk, putting the fruit next to the checkout line, and doing some of those subconscious things that can make people more likely to make those healthy choices. But sometimes if someone is going somewhere with the intent of going to buy fries and a burger, we can do all the marketing and shifting that we want. But if that's their intent going in, that's what they're going to purchase.
Yeah, if you put the plain milk in front of the chocolate milk, you're going to have a lot of toppled over plain milks.
You might, right.
And a lot of gone chocolate milk. And that's, I guess, that's the consciousness, Dr. Albers, is the idea, the mindfulness of saying, I'm purposely going to get the healthier option. I'll feel just as good.
Right. And starting early with kids, of teaching them how to be more mindful. And as early as, you know, 4 or 5, kids can, they know what this concept is. It's not about dieting. It's about eating slowly, about making good choices. And it's interesting when you watch kids and they've started to learn some of these concepts, they'll start instructing their parents, you know, about going when they go to McDonald's, Mom, you should buy this instead of that.
It's always awesome when that happens. It's just like with kids now telling you to wear your seatbelt.
Exactly.
Or put your bike
that
helmet
is exactly
on.
The same thing. Yes.
So this is I did this device on purpose to leave suspense. It wasn't that I forgot about these two other S's. But I do have a note here saying, hey, you forgot the two other S's from Lauren. And so I just want to get that out before we take phone calls from Sarah and Eric. We're going to be getting to you in just a moment. So sit down and eat was the first S. Slowly chew was the second S. And savor, really smell your food, notice it, taste it, those types of things. Those three, let's get the two other S's in, Dr. Albers.
The next S is to simplify your environment. As I said, we live in this mindless eating environment. So take a look around your desk, your kitchen. And what research indicates is that where you place food matters, that if you place food on your counter, you're going to eat it. I mean, we see what we eat in sight, in mind. So the opposite is true as well. So if you have foods that you tend to mindlessly eat, put them in the back of the cupboard.
Don't buy them.
Or don't buy them. But, you know, we are going to have snacks that we like. You know, that's just realistic. And this study was done at Cornell, and they placed Hershey Kisses either on someone's desk where they could see them, in a drawer next to them where they couldn't see it, but they knew it was there, or across the room. And they found that they ate significant, and they couldn't see them, but they had to get up to go get them. And they found that people ate significantly less when they were across the room. So where you place food matters. And the opposite is true as well, is that if you put on your counter a bowl for your family of some healthy snacks, we are creatures of convenience. We'll go for that bowl because it's there and we see it. And it's easy.
I was over at the Plain Dealer office yesterday in Tower City, and somebody had brought in homemade cookies and put the Tupperware container out on the cabinet. There wasn't a single person that didn't at least go by and get one.
Absolutely.
Because it was there. I've never seen anyone put grapes out.
Yeah.
But that office thing can really sabotage you. Even if it's better to put it somewhere else and not at your right hand, it's still, you know, it's there and you're going to make the pass around that spot.
That's right. And in my previous office I worked at, they used to keep food that people brought in right in the path where people would walk. And then they made a little shift where the new rule was that it had to go downstairs. Significantly changed the mindless eating in our office, just simply moving those snacks from the path where people would walk. They would, if you wanted a snack, that was fine, but you'd have to go down the stairs and actually intentionally go get it instead of, oh, I'm just walking by.
Well, that helps on the Fitbit anyway. You get couple hundred steps. And then what's the last one?
And then the last one is to smile between each bite. And whereas it may sound a little silly, what it does is it gives you a pause moment to say, am I really hungry? Do I really want the next bite? And too often we are just eating and not really pausing and thinking about it. So the next time you're eating, take a smile, a pause moment, and ask yourself, do I want more?
You'll make the world a better place, too. Let's get a couple of phone calls involved with our experts this morning. Sarah is calling in from Cleveland Heights. Sarah, welcome to the show. Thanks for calling.
Thanks very much. I'd love to hear your doctor guest's comment on this. It seems to me it's maybe if people realize the actual villain in the situation, and it's fairly straightforward. 1957. High fructose corn syrup was invented by the corn industry. It was rapidly used, taken up by the fast food industry because, unlike other sugars of the past, it doesn't provide satiation. It's, in effect, an addiction, so that you want more and more and more and more. If we made this a particular chemical illegal, we could go back. You know, we had cookies before 1957, but we didn't have this explosion of overweight, obesity, and all the terrible things that go along with that. And people, if they realized there was an actual enemy that they were being undermined by, maybe they would be more able to address the situation and seriously search out cookies and refreshments that weren't. I mean, they even put this stuff prior to selling them in the fast food industry, and it's not just McDonald's, and they're not. It's not the only lot in McDonald's. Isn't the only one in the Cleveland Clinic, but they put it sprayed it on the. You know, these fast food outlets have had it sprayed on their bacon and their meat.
Let's ask our nutritionist about that, Janine Leon. What about the impact of high fructose corn syrup?
I think the impact of the high fructose corn syrup, and really beyond just the high fructose corn syrup, manufacturers are intentionally adding flavor enhancements to essentially addict us to some of the foods so that therefore they make more money. So it's not simply high fructose corn syrup, but also salt or sodium and also fat. So we know that those three substances actually stimulate dopamine pathways, which in our brain are going to sort of light up and make us crave more of these types of foods. And as soon as we eat them, kind of quiets this all back down. And manufacturers are well aware of this and are manipulating it.
Dr. Lepe, what about that? Are we under attack, really, by the food manufacturers?
You know, I think the food companies are in the business of selling food and getting you to buy things. So the more that you like it and the better you think it tastes, the more you're going to buy it. So, you know, they're not necessarily in the business of making us healthy, right? There is more of a recent push where the food manufacturers are kind of succumbing to societal pressures to make foods healthier. But again, you have to be careful of the marketing that's happening. You know, there's very confusing statements that are put on foods about, you know, what is whole grain, what is whole wheat, what is low fat, low salt, and really understanding and learning how to look at labels and being aware of that. The other thing is that I've heard some advice in the past, which I think is quite good advice, is that if you're going to have a sweet or a treat, have it be something you've cooked yourself. So if you want cookies, go through the effort of cooking it. And it's going to be likely to be much healthier than one that you buy in a package or in a store. And they'll likely be cheaper, too.
And that goes back to that issue I talked about with some chefs that I know, that it's they only eat what they make. And yeah, they'll eat fat, but it's not fat that was put in by a factory. It's fat that they added to a dish themselves. It's the idea of sort of taking control of your food, Dr. Albers.
And it's so important to be mindful of what is in your food. So if you're going to take one step is to turn over that package and see what's inside of it. Sweeteners, artificial sweeteners, are often about 300 times sweeter than natural sugars. So if a strawberry no longer tastes good to you, it's likely that your diet maybe has an abundance of these sweeteners.
And you see people sprinkling sugar over a strawberry.
Over strawberries.
The strawberry and sugar.
Yes, exactly. And so it changes our taste buds. And when people start to become more mindful of their taste of foods, it's very interesting, the shift. Just in a matter of, you know, just a few weeks, when you start paying attention to taste and moving away from and towards some of the whole foods, people's taste buds change, and it's very interesting. And then they go back and they taste things and they say, oh my goodness, this is so sweet or so salty, and they didn't realize it before.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to take a quick break here, and when we come back, we'll take some more phone calls. I promised you, Eric, that you'll get on the air, and you will right after the break. Stephanie as well. And you can join us at 216-578-0903 or 866-578-0903 with your thoughts or questions as we continue our conversation about mindless eating and transitioning to mindful eating. And before we go to break, I want to say thank you to you, Dr. Sarah LePay, pediatrician and medical director of the Be Well Kids Clinic at the Cleveland Clinic at Cleveland Clinic Children's, and also the program Fit Youth. Before we go, though, we talked about some general advice for children, but you have specific programs that are targeting these young people. Are you seeing success?
Sure. We have a couple different programs at the clinic to try to help, you know, children that are overweight and are struggling with eating. There's, as you mentioned, I'm the medical director of the Be Well Kids program, which is a medical-based individual program for children that are overweight. We have a psychologist, a dietitian, exercise specialist, and medical providers that help the children come up with a plan and see what's appropriate for the child. The other one of the other programs we have is Fit Youth, which is an evening group session program where children are matched by age, and they are together and meet with dietitians and psychologists and do some movement in a group setting to try to learn some of these healthy eating behaviors, mindfulness, and physical activity. And then we also have some programs we sponsor in the schools and some upcoming partnerships with the Y of some programs that we're doing.
I thought a couple of the tips that were particularly interesting that you share with the kids: always be sitting when you're eating, not necessarily on the go. Make sure your electronics are off so you're not sitting there cruising Twitter while you're just throwing
Absolutely.
Food into your mouth. And then finally, when you ask for a snack, you go through literally a hunger scale, just like the pain scale is when you're ill and in the hospital. A 1 to 10, how hungry are you?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So taking the time to really take a moment, evaluate, why are you asking for a snack? Is it because you're bored? Is it because it goes with what you're doing? You know, are you watching a movie, therefore you want popcorn, or are you truly hungry? So taking the time to help your child figure out where they are on that scale.
Great advice. Dr. Sarah LePay, thanks so much for being with us from Cleveland Clinic Children's.
All right. Thank you so much for having me.
All right. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to continue our conversation. Eric's going to join us, Stephanie, and you can too at 216-578-0903. We'll be right back. It's the Sound of Ideas from 90.3. Coming up in the next hour, ongoing fears of a slowdown in the Chinese economy drive a stock sell-off and declines in commodity prices worldwide. Diane Rehm and her guests will look at what the global market downturn could mean for the U.S. economy, businesses, and consumers. And by the way, the Dow so far this morning is up 303 after yesterday's 500-plus point loss, so that's good news. Not time to panic, but I'm sure Diane will give you the ins and outs of all of that in the next hour. Tomorrow on The Sound of Ideas, we'll discuss how to navigate the uncomfortable and often confusing field of end-of-life decision-making. We'll offer practical advice about how you can talk to your family and doctors about death and how to make your wishes known and followed. And then at the end of the show, we're going to spend a few minutes with a charter school advocate from the Gates Foundation in Cleveland to talk about how some charter schools are working with public districts to improve education. Right now, we're talking mindless eating, and joining me in the studio is Dr. Susan Albers. She's a clinical psychologist at the Cleveland Clinic, and she is an expert on this topic, a New York Times bestselling author, several books. Also, Janine Leone is with us, nutritionist at MetroHealth, and as we've learned from this hour so far, also proven to be an expert on this topic. And if you'd like to join us, 866-578-0903 is the phone number to call. Eric is joining us now. Hello there, Eric.
Hello.
Very good to have you. Eric is calling from the East Side. What's on your mind?
Well, I own several studios in the Cleveland area, and we focus on exercise and nutrition. And when it comes to nutrition, what we start with all our clients is basically having them write down their normal habits for a couple days and on a food journal, in a sense. And when they see that, often they're like, oh, my gosh, I didn't realize I was consuming this much, or even I wasn't consuming enough. Because when it comes down to nutrition, it's not directly what we're eating. You know, fatty foods don't make us fat in a sense. Chocolate doesn't. Martinis don't. What it comes down to is when we consume above and beyond the amount of calories that our bodies can actually burn each day. And unfortunately, as we get older, it's a little bit higher in women than in men. But on average, a woman will gain about a pound and a half of fat per year between her early teens and her 50s and plus, and lose on average about a half pound of muscle per year. So as she gets older, gradually her metabolism slows down. So then fewer and fewer of the calories that she consumes or he consumes is actually used up as energy. More start to be stored as fat. So, you know, I think 50% of the issue is nutrition, yes, and eating healthy and all that is great. But the other 50% of the issue is exercise, you know, keeping a healthy metabolism by keeping that muscle on your body that by not doing anything over time, you'll lose it.
Eric, thanks for that point. And to that point, if you're mindful about what you're eating, are you more likely to then get up and be mindful about getting off your butt too?
Definitely. There's a ripple effect. And he makes an excellent point about awareness. The power of awareness is huge. And if you're somebody who doesn't have a lot of time to write down what you eat, I would challenge you to take a picture of everything that you eat today, and at the end of the day, you can review it, and it's a quick and easy way to raise your awareness.
I never even thought of that. Yeah. Paul was saying in the meeting yesterday, you know, there are apps for that, and I thought, well, you still have to log onto the app and type in what you ate, and it'll tell you the calories, and you can add it up, but you could just take a picture.
Absolutely.
Wow. Yeah. Mm-hmm. If you kept a catalog for each day, if you end up running out of space on your phone, you're eating too much, right?
Yes.
216-578-0903. That's the phone number to call. And let's have Stephanie, as I mentioned, join our conversation now. She is calling from Northfield Center, I think. Hello there, Stephanie.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. First of all, I want to say I like the idea about taking a photo of your food.
Yeah, it's a great idea.
It is a great idea. I'm a counselor educator, so I understand mindfulness and I understand the role of neurotransmitters. But one of the things that I've been challenged with for my own personal eating habits is that I have a nut allergy, and I'm 43 years old, and I've had it since I was 1.5 when I was diagnosed. However, one of the individuals on your panel recommended like peanut butter with celery for that 5:30 snack, and I like the 5:30 snack, and I want it to have crunch, but I can't eat nuts. So what would you recommend besides chickpeas?
Okay, Janine, celery with cream cheese? No.
I prefer carrots with hummus.
Carrots with hummus.
I like carrots with hummus. I'll give you that crunch factor real quickly. You can also consider doing some string cheese and having a couple of whole grain crunchy crackers like the Triscuits. So you don't need to worry about just having to have nuts. There's many other nutritional options out there. Also, if you tolerate seeds, the sun butter or the soy butter products taste an awful lot like peanut butter. So you might be able to have that celery just with a different butter on top.
So if you have a nut allergy, obviously that's a problem. But in general, nuts are pretty good. I keep hearing nuts are good, but then when I'm halfway through, right. So you can't eat half the bottle.
You can't. You cannot eat half the bottle.
Or can,
and Dr.
Or
Albers has a great example.
Yeah, so we've got some props in front of us that Dr. Albers brought, some of which are nuts. So you're showing us maybe what some of the bad and some of the good are?
Well, I love pistachios, particularly if you're a stress eater, because, one, because they're the lowest calorie nut, and they also have the lowest fat of all the nuts. But what I really like about them, and there's a concept called the pistachio effect in psychology.
Really?
And what it is you should buy nuts in their shell. And that's because it slows us down. We have to open them up instead of reaching into a can and mindlessly popping the nuts into our mouth, because we lose track really quickly.
So we eat less because of that, you think?
Because of that. Mm-hmm. And yes, there are several studies that have looked at the difference between how many you eat. And also, it's because you at the end, you get this little pile of shells. And so you can see visually how many you've eaten versus if you're, again, eating out of a can of nuts, you just really quickly lose track. So if you're a stress eater, I love these. They help to regulate your blood sugar, and they just always taste really good.
And there's at least five pistachios you can't open.
and they come, at least now, they come in these great little packages that are, they're already portioned for you as well, which really helps, just makes it easy.
What else you got over there?
I've got my second favorite snack for stress eaters are mandarin oranges. I like them better than oranges in many cases because they're less sticky, easy to eat. And also you can kind of have this meditative moment where you just unpeel it and it's perfectly segmented. They're about 80 calories and they're sweet. And so you just mindfully eat each segment and enjoy it.
And if you're in a zen spot,
in a zen moment,
you can peel that thing in one peel.
You know? You can. Yeah. That's true. That's true.
That's a victory right there.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And you got some other great stuff there, like Oreos.
I do. Now, again, I said I'm a food lover. I love food. I'm not one of these food haters, but eating food that you love in a mindful way. So I've got a package of cookies. And one of the concepts is in psychology is called a pause point. And so one of the things that you can do with cookies is that you can buy them in smaller packages. They often come in smaller packages. And when you get to the bottom of the smaller package, there's a pause moment that you have to ask yourself, do I want more? So you don't have to buy some of the smaller packages are expensive. So you can take the cookies that you like and put them in baggies. That can often help. But we have we have lots of different options of foods that we like that are snack foods. You just have to find them, how to eat them in a mindful way, even if they are cookies.
And the portioning them out sounds like a good idea. It's the same advice you get when you go to a restaurant and you say, I already want half of that in the to-go container. I don't want it on my plate. Mm-hmm. And Janine Leon, what about the idea of controlling your portion before you start?
Yeah, if you sit down with an intention, I think with Chipotle, that's a great example. Oh, mm-hmm. Those bowls and burritos are ginormous. So
is that an actual word?
I'm not sure.
It's a nutrition word.
But one of the things I teach my patients on our pediatric wellness center is just cut that burrito in half, or plan on that bowl being three meals instead of one, or even two meals instead of one. So set down your intentions. It's not just fast food. These mainline restaurant foods as well are very highly seasoned, very savory, and the portions are quite large, and it's readily available because we don't have time to cook.
My wife does a great job with that. It's always lunch the next day from Chipotle when we have the dinner that night, but my kids and I, that burrito's gone. It's not, you don't think about that, but if you did it intentionally, cut it in half, and then felt like you were satisfied after half of it, it might work.
Yeah, give yourself enough time to recognize that you're satisfied as well.
All right, let's squeeze in one quick call here from Richard on the West Side. Richard, you're on. You got about a minute.
Yes, came in late on the show, but what the doctors were saying, I agree with totally. But I think it would be a good idea to start teaching the kids health and gym. It'll all be the same class, and they will learn a lifelong lesson about healthy habits and exercise.
That's a great idea, and I think a lot of schools do that, but combining the idea of phys ed, it's not just getting hit in the head with a dodgeball. It's also learning the proper way to eat.
If I could jump in, one of the things Metro Health is doing is actually going to some of the schools, and a diet tech is going along with the trainer. So in those gym segments or recess segments, they are getting both nutrition and fitness opportunities. So there's some of that starting to happen in this community.
All right, we have half a minute, but I got to know about the red plate. The red plate
okay,
about,
so
Dr.
the
Elvis?
Red plate. Another psychological trick is to eat off of red plates. There was a study done on white plates versus blue plates versus red plates, and they found that actually we eat the least off of red plates because our mind is automatically trained to stop when we see red.
Wow, we have red and yellow plates. I have to start using the red ones.
There you go.
What about smaller plates? Also
smaller
a good
plates
idea?
As well, yes. That's important as well.
All right, a lot more advice. You can access that on our website, wcpn.org/SOI. But thanks, both of you, for a great job today, Dr. Susan Albers and Janine Leone. Dr. Susan Albers from the Cleveland Clinic and Janine Leone from Metro Health. Appreciate both of you being here.
Thank you so much.
And if you'd like to get the last word, go ahead and send us an email. SOI@WCPN.org. You can log on to our website, WCPN.org/SOI. We've got archives of past shows there as well. And you can continue the conversation right now at theciviccommons.org. We've got a conversation going there right now that Andrew Samtoy is hosting. If you missed part of the discussion, again, WCPN.org is where we have the archives. Sound of Ideas was produced today by Lauren Wilson, producers Paul Cox and Amy Cummings on the show. Our technical producer is Jack Helbig, and Sophie Goldenberg is at the controls of the Ohio Channel broadcast. I'm Mike McIntyre. Thanks for listening this morning. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.
Your public radio station for more than 30 years, 90.3 WCPN. Idea Stream.